Hello and welcome to edition 269 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula 1. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. We are sat in the comfort of our own homes again today, but as ever, we're bringing you all the latest news and talking points for Formula 1. Coming up, for Ferrari's future in FP1 and sayonara Honda again. I am Damon Hill, radical and blogger, as well as part-time host Richard Baxter. And joining me tonight is the two times Beckles Kart champion, the Oracle. It's Kyle Cumbers.
Good evening, Rich. How are you?
Yeah, all good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, all good. Can't complain.
Good. You keeping safe during all the latest COVID measures?
Yeah. Keeping my social distance. yeah. Just trying to do your bit. It's pretty rough for everybody, but you know, got my health, so I can't. Yeah, can't complain.
Absolutely. That is, of course, we should say to everyone why we are recording this through the internet, and we're not sat at the usual pub. But I'm sure you appreciate it as much as us about keeping everyone safe and our families and friends safe. So, yeah, we're just doing our bit. So thank you for sticking with us while it's not the usual podcast. But we've got loads to talk about, and we're going to do things a little bit differently today because there's so much F1 news to talk about. And to be honest, Russia wasn't that exciting. So with that, there's not really too much to discuss from Russia other than Lewis Hamilton's penalties. They're really strange, weren't they, Kyle? So he was given two penalties for basically the same thing that he did wrong, which was a practice start in the wrong place.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm being a bit of a British motorsport fan and therefore a Lewis Hamilton fan. I was thinking, am I being a bit biased, but it did seem particularly harsh to get in total a 10-second penalty for doing a practice start in the wrong position. I know there's obviously quite strict rules on that, probably for safety reasons, but to me it seemed like a fine sort of penalty for me. It didn't think it deserved to mess around with the race, in which it did. And
yeah, well, this was my next question. I was going to say, you know, did you think it was harsh or fair? I mean, like you've just said, it seemed harsh. And 10 seconds in total for something that didn't even happen in the race, technically, is very strange.
Yeah, that's... I mean, I suppose there is clear rules, and he was trying to... Part of the reason they gave 5-second penalties, he was trying to get an advantage because the normal grid... or the normal place to practice your starts was just full of rubber. So he didn't think it was worthwhile doing because it was, you know, wasn't going to be the same conditions on the grid. So just really, they could say you got a sporting advantage from doing that. But it's like, really? A whole 10 seconds to ruin a race? Sometimes you just got, even if they're giving him a free place grid penalty for the next race or something like that, those sort of penalties, just for the people there, because she had spectators there this weekend, it was just crap, wasn't it?
In reality, it was the race.
He's winning, you know, leading the race, and then suddenly, and you pretty much knew it was all over.
Yeah, and here's the thing I didn't get. He did it twice. Now, he asked the team, is it okay to do it there? The team said, yeah, that's fine. Just stay out the way of other drivers. Make sure you're safe. And the FIA then obviously investigated afterwards. Now, if the FIA could see there was a problem and that shouldn't be done, why not just turn around to the team who they have on radio at the push of a button and just say, practice starts in that position are not allowed. Do not do it again. You know, there will be penalties or something. They could have easily warned them.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think also, I did listen to something yesterday, which I didn't realise. So I originally thought, because he'd done it twice, they gave him two penalties for that. I'm not totally sure this is correct, but I did hear that because he came through the pits and didn't do a practice start, that was also wrong, because he came in the pits for the wrong reasons or something. So that's why he got a second penalty.
Strange.
Because he just drove through I didn't quite fully understand what they said, but yeah, it just... Even if it, on a grid, because obviously knew what he'd done, didn't they? So it was quite clear cut. If he broke, if in their eyes he broke the rules, it's clear cut what he did. So
yeah,
they could have said on the grid, they could have moved him on the grid, couldn't they? Back three places or something. But I just thought, just yeah, 10 seconds. I mean, you have to do quite a lot to get a 10 second penalty.
Yeah, definitely.
These days, don't you? So I just thought, yeah, it's just ruined the race in a way.
Yeah, and it's strange because Mercedes, you know, they're this kind of big powerhouse who don't make mistakes. They're very efficient. But this season, they've been a bit shaky. I mean, obviously, they didn't tell Hamilton about the pit lane being closed in Monza. So, of course, he got a penalty there. Partly Hamilton's fault as well, you have to say. And then, of course, here, again, you know, it was the team were like, yeah, that's fine, do a practice start where you want. So Mercedes seems to be slipping up a bit as well.
Yeah.
Which
seems to have issues with pit lanes.
Yeah.
That's the issue, isn't it? When they can go in and where they can stop in them and all.
On that note, with Germany coming up next, which we'll get into later, of course, we all know what happened at the last German Grand Prix with Mercedes.
That's true, yes. That was another incident, wasn't it? Yeah. All his penalties seem to be pit lane related, don't they? unless he's crashing into Albon.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm so glad he didn't get because it was two points on his license. This is the other thing.
These points they were going to put on his license, which the FIA suddenly turned around and said, actually, no, we're not going to do that. It completely, in my opinion, contradicted their whole reasoning for giving a penalty in the first place. It's like, if you're going to give the points, justify it and give it. Don't like give them and say, oh, actually, we changed our mind. No, we don't need that. We won't give the points. It just seemed daft to me.
Yeah. Like you said, it was probably from the start, wasn't it? We were told that Mercedes said that it was fine to do it.
Mm.
So it just all seemed bizarre. Very bizarre.
But was
he have 10 points or 9 points he'd had on his license? So it'd only been like probably one incident away from getting a ban. You're like,
yeah.
He hasn't done that much wrong, really, has he? To get the ban, really.
Imagine if that was the race ban. You know, so you've got a race ban because you collected these points because you did a practice start in the wrong place. I mean, that would be a bit all over the place. But I think it was that Russian weekend seemed strange to me because it wasn't just the penalties there and it's the reasoning. The reasoning at turn two, which is essentially turn one, they had this rule where if you run wide and you touch this big sausage curb, you have to go really wide into the runoff area and follow a specific route through the barriers. And I think we had this, it was either Bahrain or Spain, with their kind of turn one, two, three being that kind of right, left, right situation. We had it there, I think, a few years ago. And it kind of worked there. But here in Russia, it didn't seem to really work for me. What did you make of it?
Just that they need to do something with that corner, really, didn't they? But it just seemed a bit over tight, as you put it. Obviously, and Carlos Sainz would probably agree.
Yeah, because it was like you touched this curb, even just a slight bit, rather than carrying on circuit, maybe being offline and losing time, because you've just whacked into this big speed bump.
Yeah.
You had to then go over the top of it and go really wide and through the polystyrene barriers and between the wall, which we should mention Carlos Sainz kind of messed up a bit right at the start of the race. But it wasn't only him, because if you remember, Romain Grosjean during the race just touched the curb. So it was like, oh, I've got to go wide. So we went wide and tried to go through, but then he couldn't actually get through because it was so tight. So we just drove through the polystyrene. So we had a virtual safety car for half a lap while they replaced the boards.
But yeah.
What was the reasoning behind that decision? It was like, just move the curb back maybe a foot or so. It would have been okay. But I don't know.
Yeah, it was like you went slightly offline. You're like, you're already penalised in a race. Like I said, we went over the sausage curbs, didn't you? You're already penalised and to get back on. And you sort of had to make that judgment whether you were going to run wide, because then it would be quicker just to go straight on and head for the chicane. But if you try to hang on and just went, you know, a few inches too far, then you had to really go out of your way to get around these silly orange markers. yeah, I'm sure there's a better way of doing it. But yeah, so Grosjean, he ended up, I'm trying to remember that, he smashed into him, didn't he? But then he had to actually drive through them later on, didn't he?
Yeah.
He went wide again, did he? Yeah. There's also this quick work by the Russian marshals to get the new boards in. I thought that's quite impressive.
Yeah, I wondered how many they had, because they seem to just have spares there. So it's like, have they just got like 20 of these boards lined up, thinking, just someone's going to drive through them, we'll just wait.
Yeah. Was it Toro, not Toro Rossi, Alpha Tori. Did they bring Gasly or Kvyat in? Because it was a virtual safety car, wasn't it?
Yeah, they brought Gasly in, I think.
Yeah, but the Russian marshals were so quick that it didn't work out for them.
No, I mean, he had fresh tyres, Gasly, and then I think he had a race with, was it Norris and Albon, who were then kind of coming up to the points.
Yeah, it was Gasly, yeah. And he pretty much ended up trying to fight back to the position he was at in the first place, wasn't he? So it was...
Yeah.
Didn't really work out.
But, I mean, as soon as I saw that VSC, I was trying to like, right, pit, you know, take advantage. But,
yeah.
I mean, you know, that's... I don't work for AlphaTauri, but, you know, that would have been me. I feel for them. Oh, excellent. Now, obviously, these penalties are a bit confusing. So if anyone wants their say, please do get in touch. And there's plenty of ways to get in touch with us. Social media is probably the easiest. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. The handle for all three of those is at @thenrf1. And we have a question as well for you listeners, which Kyle was bringing up, because Williams are obviously going through a transition period right now, with obviously the Williams family leaving. They've got new owners and investors. And you were saying earlier, Kyle, like, could you, if like Niki Lauda, when he was at Mercedes, he's kind of Toto's mate position. And I think we looked it up, and his official title was non-executive chairman of Mercedes-Benz. Now, if Williams were to say, let's do the same, let's do a Mercedes-style approach, and let's hire a Niki Lauda but of Williams. You wanted to know who people would choose, weren't you, Carl?
Yeah, because I think... Obviously, the Williams name is still there. Obviously, Williams, as you said, the Williams family have left. So it'd be nice to have a Williams ex-driver, Williams legend, just in the team to kind of keep the history of the team going. And obviously, Williams has got a great history and some great drivers. You know, great engineers or and great personnel that have been at the team. So it'd just be nice to have somebody there just to maybe do a bit of advising and just be a shoulder to somebody to... maybe cry or to discuss things with, as you know, it seemed with Niki Lauda and Toto Wolff, the great relationship they had. And it seemed to work for Mercedes.
Yeah, definitely.
And obviously this long list of potential drivers. You got both Rosbergs.
Yeah, KK, true.
And Nico. I can see sort of Nico doing that sort of.
Oh, sort my of gosh. Could you imagine if he came back and was that? You'd never hear the end of it. He'd be on YouTube every week telling you about it.
Oh God, yes. I haven't really watched much of his YouTube recently. But you got, obviously, you'd probably be, you know, a fan of Damon Hill maybe taking up the role, Rich.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Damon do that. I think he has a good understanding of it still. But I think I think he'd rather stay with Sky, to be honest, because then he can talk about whoever he wants and doesn't have to, you know, choose sides, as it were.
I think he enjoys his life of golf and a bit of music and a bit of
still rocking. He's still rocking.
Yeah, he's still. Was he 60 the other week?
Oh, I've no idea. Yeah. He's quite old though, isn't he?
Yeah, and I was like, Jesus. But then that's really, because he was about 35. Was he 35 when he won the title?
Yeah, I mean, he was. I think 30. I think he was like 33 when he was just getting started in football.
Yeah.
So.
He probably is at 60, isn't he? He's like, geez.
Yeah, it's
makes
getting
me feel old. he looks good for 60, though, old Damon.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I mean, there's plenty of drivers you could choose from. You've got the likes of Prost, Mansell, of course. I mean, obviously, Prost is obviously caught up at Renault right now. But so many choices.
Yeah, I think entertaining-wise, Montoya would be pretty entertaining, I think.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Or Jacques Villeneuve, he's never dull for... yeah, there's plenty of options. So.
Oh no, yeah. There's one guy I know who Ped would like, but we won't utter his name. because
can you imagine it? Well, he'd be back in the car in like mid-season.
He would. He'd love it. He'd be like, you get these football teams who have a player manager. Like, do you remember? I think it was like Barnes or someone, and they had Edgar Davids, the former Juventus player. He was their player manager, and Edgar Davids used to like, they'd get to half time and be like, right, I'm subbing myself on, and then 5 minutes later he'd be red carded and he'd be off. It's like, I could just see Maldini, like you say, I mean, yeah, I nearly said his name there, but who we shall not name. He'd like you say, he'd be doing that.
That would be all, yeah. One bad race from one of the drivers and he'd be straight in there.
But yeah, listeners, please do get in touch and let us know who you would make, the Lauda or Williams. Like we said, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, handle for all three of those is at the NRF1. And of course, there's all the usual ways to get in touch with us. Head over to Patreon, that's patreon.com/NRF1. Normally, you will find the full edition of this podcast, including our Of the Weekend Awards, the Norfolk Notebook, and the NRF1 Pit Stops. But as we're doing things a little bit differently today, that will be on the next podcast as usual. And of course, email us as well. The address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com. And give us a follow on Twitch if you're on there as well. We're going to be doing more on Twitch soon. Just search the NRF1 again. So pretty standard.
Hello, everyone. This is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Let's get into other news, Kyle, because there's so much to talk about. And there was a big announcement during last week. Honda, they are leaving the sport again, this time at the end of 2021. What do you think about that? Surprised?
Yeah, I was surprised, actually. Didn't see that coming. It's the fourth time they've left F1. I was just annoyed at them, really.
Yeah.
I know I'm very much of, you know, people and companies and whatever can decide what they want to do. And if they don't want to do F1 anymore, fair enough, it's up to them. But I was just annoyed. I was just like, they're doing well. They've had a tough start, which probably, in my opinion, wasn't all their fault. I think partly it was McLaren and the demands McLaren had at the time. They found Red Bull. They seem to be a good combination. They're two teams there, winning races with both teams, the Gasly. And you just thought, 2022, new regulations, Red Bull, Adrian Newey team, they had a good chance of winning world championships. I was bloody annoyed in a way. It seems just too quick. They haven't been, was it 7 years, I think, they've been in the sport now. And that's just flown by, and I just thought they're getting good. Just a bit like how they were in 2008. And then when obviously Braun took them over. Yeah, I just think it's a waste.
And
what about you, Rich?
Yeah, it's strange because I was not expecting the news. And part of me thinks, obviously, Fernando Alonso is coming back to Renault next year. And I just think, are they scared to speak to Alonso again? Are they scared of the abuse they might get or something like that? But who knows what their reasoning is. But you remember, obviously, 2008, they left the sport, going to 2009. Braun team, who obviously took over the Honda car, which was obviously their design and everything, had a big advantage over the rest of the field. And you think of it again, and you think, you know, what if they left the sport? And I mean, there is talks of Red Bull basically coming to an agreement to basically buy the Honda package, so buy their engine, but unbranded. I mean, could you imagine if that was suddenly the best engine in Formula One, and like Honda suddenly just missed out on all this? It's strange.
It was sad for everyone to lose another engine supplier. So yeah. I kind of hope Red Bull do something with them and maybe have help from somewhere else, or maybe even F1 get involved and have like a sort of like a stock engine or other engine for teams to use. But it's just a bit annoyed with them, really.
Yeah, because there was the talks about the new engine rules. I think they're coming in 2025, and they're talking about, or people are talking about, trying to encourage Formula One to bring them forward and everything. So who knows how that will go? We'll see. But it is a shame, and I just hope that they bring, you know, they get something in so they can get engine providers in, and you know, it's cheaper to build these engines. Because I mean, Cosworth, let's get them back. Love to see them back in the sport.
Well, sort of part of the problem, they sort of designed these engines because manufacturers wanted them, you know, for modern day technology. But we've only got three left, that sort of, when Honda do leave, and it's hard for anybody else to come in.
Yeah, I'd like to see Ford back in the sport. I mean, they've with Formula One, they've actually got quite a rich history, of course, from providing Lotus with engines, I think, at the beginning. I believe they provided Lotus, didn't they? Have I got that right?
Could be. I'm not totally sure.
I hope that's right. Tell us if we're wrong. But they also obviously did the Stewart team as well. They gave engines to them.
Lots of options, and you know, a few more teams ideally as well. So
yeah, definitely.
And hopefully that will attract the budget cap will attract possibly new teams, and maybe also because of the budget cap, Red Bull might think, well, we've got a bit more room, a bit more money to possibly spend on an engine project. And also the is Andy Cowell, the chap's name, Mercedes guy who's leaving Mercedes or has left Mercedes already. Maybe give him a ring.
I recognise the name, so that sounds right.
Yeah. Maybe give him a ring for a new little project.
Yeah, absolutely. Other news. Looks like Raikkonen is staying for at least another year.
Yeah, that was all the news this morning, wasn't it? And I think in his press conference, he kind of played that cool and said he hasn't signed anything yet and whatever, but... Be interesting, yeah. I do, you know, we all like Kimi for his ways, but you do sort of start to wonder, is it time for a bit of fresh blood in the sport? And also, I'm just, if he does want to stay, I'm kind of surprised he does in a way, because I mean, he's had a decent season, but does he still want to be competing for 13th and 14th? But
well, this is the interesting thing, because I mean, there's been several times this year where he has been the highest placed Ferrari engined car.
Yeah,
I didn't word that quite nicely, quite well. My words are going tonight. It's been a long day, but you know what I mean.
Category C, if you include Williams in that sort of Ferrari and Williams race at the back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. And he's been the highest placed out of several times out of those drivers. So he's still obviously got the talent there. I don't think that's ever lacking. If he wants to stay, I guess he still has the fire in his belly to keep going. Yeah. So
if he just enjoys driving race cars quickly, then fair enough. But I suppose Alfa Romeo, I suppose ideally they probably want Giovinazzi to have maybe proven a bit more. Obviously it's difficult because he's the car he's been in, but maybe they're hoping for a bit more from him. And obviously the seat alongside the second seat as such in Alfa Romeo kind of belongs to Ferrari and whoever they decide to put in it, so maybe they want somebody experienced next to him, and away he goes. But you'd have thought, especially with a few like Perez and Hülkenberg available, maybe they would have gone after someone like that. But maybe they did, and they weren't. Maybe they weren't interested in going to Alfa Romeo. You never know. But
yeah, that's true.
But he'll be 40. Is he 41 or 40 at the moment? So
yeah, he's a bit older, isn't he, than the others?
Yeah, but fair dues to him if he still wants to do it. I'm just a little bit surprised.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's some other news as well, which has been going on over the last few days. And it's It's talks of a new Brazilian Grand Prix track, which has been proposed at Rio. And there's a bit of an issue with this track because I think it was a motorsport banter. I think they were formerly F1 banter on Instagram. And basically this Brazilian Grand Prix track, if they were to build it at Rio, it would result in tearing trees down to build it. And this motorsport banter page said that they would never have thought there was something that would make both Formula One fans and environmentalists equally angry. And I think that's a fair point. I mean, with the environment and everything, we don't want to be tearing down trees to build a racetrack. No. And most of all, we do not want to be losing Interlagos, because that is just such a brilliant circuit.
Yeah, it's one of the, it's got the history and it's one of the best tracks on the grid. And ideally, for me, it'd always be the last Grand Prix of the year.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, because the chaos, you know, the weather sometimes, isn't it? And the history of those, you know, in 2008 with Hamilton and Massa, and
2012.
Yeah, of course.
Vettel,
yeah.
Alonso.
Yeah. So, yeah, should Interlagos is a proper track and should still be on the calendar. And yeah, like you said, it's, I mean, Brazil, I mean, I don't know too much, but you know, various issues and them cutting down trees in other parts of Brazil and stuff, but it's just, yeah, it doesn't seem right when F1 is trying to be greener, and in my opinion doing a pretty decent job at it. It just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, 100%. But we'll see. We'll, you know, us here, we're against it. We want Interlagos to stay, but we'll see what happens. But I'm sure, knowing what Formula One is like, money talks. So,
yes.
Yeah. Okay, next up, we're returning to the ring. It's the Eiffel Grand Prix. And we are at the Nürburgring Grand Prix circuit back in Germany. How do you feel, Carl? Are you excited? Are you happy to be back at the ring?
Yeah, it's a good track. It's obviously got the history as well. Obviously with the Nordschleife next door, or part of it, whatever you call it. It's part of F1 history. It's a decent track. Weather's normally an issue. One of my memories of the Nürburgring is that, I can't remember the year now, might be 2007, because it was a huge downpour. And all the cars ended up in the gravel in the first corner. Can you remember that? Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one.
And then, well, I'm in 2007, because I think Hamilton was in the race and he left his, a lot of people just got out of the car, I think, but he actually left his engine on and he got picked up. Did he get picked up for a truck and then dumped back on the track and he carried on?
Yeah, sounds right. I think that's.
Yeah, I might have to try to find that again to see what happened. But it's just a good track, isn't it? And it looks like it's going to be bloody cold as well. So,
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, that brings me into my next question. I mean, the weather there, so unpredictable. And I remember another famous race, the 1999 Grand Prix there, where Johnny Herbert won for the Stewart team. Mm-hmm. And I just remember this watch, you know, I've rewatched it recently during lockdown as well. And it is, of course, like throwing it down with rain. And the lead changed, I don't know how many times. And it's like Coulthard takes the lead and you think, oh, we could win this. And then you just see him going across the gravel and into the barrier just on his nose and the engine's gone. And he's just like, Murray's like, oh, Coulthard! He just screams it. It's every time. And then Ralf Schumacher was in the Williams. He had a puncture, so he ran wide and went off. Fisichella took the lead, he span off. And then everyone who took the lead was just losing it straight away. And then along comes Johnny Herbert and his Stewart, wins the race. I mean, that was magical.
Yeah, good old, good old Johnny. But I'm still going back through the race. Because Mark Webber winning his first race there? When he had a penalty as well?
That was a position, yeah.
I'm trying to think of that one. What was that year, also that year that poured down the rain, didn't it, on the sort of warm-up lap, and some I think possibly was a Spyker car. Obviously, no.
Yeah.
Racing Point. A guy.
Winklehock.
Yes, that's the name. This is one-off race as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think he led a lap technically. Yeah, so he's got some. Yeah, I think the weather and the conditions there just often creates a crazy race. Remember, Hamilton had a huge crash there as well.
Yeah, I think that was his first season. He had a tyre failure, and that was a horrific crash. If anyone is, at their computer and has YouTube, look it up, because the scary thing about that for me was when you see him hit the wall, you can see him kicking his legs to make sure that they're still working, they're still there. That was a horrible crash. You can't imagine it going that fast, and yeah, that would hurt. But I mean, do you think it's going to rain this weekend? Do you think it? I know it's supposed to be cold, kind of 6-7 degrees, getting colder. Do you think it will rain, or do you think it will just be cold?
Well, I heard today that it rained tomorrow. Saturday should be dry there, but then rain in the evening and then showers on Sunday. So it'll probably be dry all weekend. but that's something that's a good chance. And also, I suppose if it's cold, it's not going to dry up as quickly, possibly.
Yeah, that's true. Just looking at Google quickly while we're here, a Saturday between 12 and 3 o'clock, it's between 30 and 40% chance of precipitation. And then the Sunday between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m, it's kind of between 20 and 50% chance moving around precipitation. So there's a possibility.
And 8 degrees as well, I can see.
Yeah, that's seeing the same thing.
So you're going to have drivers all weekend moaning how cold it is and, oh, we can't get enough heat in the tyres. Like, I'll just get on with it.
Absolutely. It's
same for everybody.
Do you think that's going to be a major factor with teams or the drivers struggling to keep the tyres warm? Do you think we're going to see some weaving around, you know, during the race and things?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I think they'll probably want to use a softer tyre maybe to get more heat. I don't know. I think it's going to be graining will be an issue as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, although we often say this, and obviously Formula One is full of very clever engineers, and they'll probably work the way around it. But they're not used to racing at them temperatures, so I think it could mean some interesting results.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of interesting results, we're going to be in for an exciting first practice session, which is tomorrow, I believe, about 10 a.m. So keep an eye on that, because we have the Ferrari Junior drivers, two of them who are featuring in this one, from F2. So we've got Callum Ilott, who is driving in the Haas, and we have Mick Schumacher, son of Michael, in the Alfa Romeo. And we should mention as well another Ferrari Academy driver, Robert Schwartzman. He's going to get his chance in FP1 in Abu Dhabi. So with these guys, obviously hoping to get a good result in practice to really show what they've got, do you think this could be the audition for next season for one of their seats?
It does feel a bit like a shootout, doesn't it? I mean, the F2 season, it's a bit of a shootout for them in a way. Mick Schumacher's been really impressive for the last few rounds for that. But it does seem... Yeah, it just sort of seems a sort of final part of their evaluation of whether they're ready to go up, I suppose, is how they deal with being part of an F1 team the weekend. I suppose stuff like feedback to the team will be important. Just how they get on, really. It's always really hard to judge from the outside, especially hard to judge FP1 sessions. But when we're seeing it in the past, I mean, when Max Verstappen on the FP1, possibly Brazil, Interlagos, and like, it's really quick in that, and you thought, wow, that's pretty impressive. I think it'd be interesting to see. I suppose, like I said before, it's just another way of evaluating them and see how they get on. Part of the F1 paddock.
Yeah, definitely. It'll be interesting to see who gets to drive, because I've got a feeling it could come down, because Ayloss and Schumacher, I think, are the top two in the F2 championship right now. Mm. So I've got a feeling it could well be whoever wins the F2 title will get a Formula One seat next year, while the other continues next season in F2. But we'll see. I could be wrong. They could both get seats.
Yeah. Even though one might be in Haas and one might be in one might be in Alfa Romeo. Although I did see a headline that Gunter Steiner said that Callum Ilott's not being considered for the Haas drive. So,
oh really?
So, like, this is the headline I saw, so I didn't know yet. I hadn't had a chance to read it properly, but well, that's quite interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think, obviously he's ruled out Callum Ilott, do you think that means that Schumacher's on his way?
Could be, yeah. Maybe that's why he's ruled him out. obviously Schwartzman, because I think it's his first year in F2. And he's been pretty impressive, so maybe they think, you know, Schwartzman has done a pretty good job straight away, and obviously Schumacher and Ilott are in their second years in F2, so they might go for somebody who's maybe impressed more in their first year than Schumacher and Ilott did. A bit like Russell and Norris.
Mm, yeah.
Very impressive in their first years, weren't they? And that was part of the reason why they went up. But, be interesting. Also, you just a Schumacher in a car in Germany's, you know, it's always good.
Yeah, that's going to be amazing to see that, definitely. All the best to him, and we look forward to seeing what's going to happen. We should also say at this point, Steve Rust is also back with us, and he is back again today with his thoughts for the race ahead. Steve, of course, being our Prediction League specialist, he's here in our latest special segment, I should say, to give us a breakdown of what we can expect at the Nürburgring. So let's get straight into Steve Says.
So what do I think will be the biggest challenges? Well, I think one of the biggest challenges that springs straight to mind for me is that we haven't actually raced here for quite a few seasons now. I mean, in recent German Grand Prix has been at Hockenheim. So I think for the teams, they won't have any up-to-date data to go through. All they'll really have is what they would be doing on their simulators back at the factories. So I think that presents a pretty big challenge in the fact that we haven't actually raced here in a while. The other one that I think will actually be quite a big challenge is actually the weather, which kind of plays quite closely into my next question to answer, because it's going to be really quite cold this weekend. It looks like we're going to see a dry race, which I'll come to in a moment, but it's going to be sort of around about sort of 7, 8, 9 degrees. So I think that is going to play quite a big factor, particularly on the Saturday when we come to qualifying, who can keep the heat in the tyres and who can get the heat into the tyres, more importantly, quickest. It may take them 2-3 laps possibly on Saturday to get the heat into the tyres to really set a hot lap. So I think that's probably one of the more bigger challenges, the colder weathers. Moving on to my second question to answer about the weather. Like I said, it's going to be cold. It doesn't look like we're going to get any rain, which I'm actually a bit disappointed about, to be honest with you. I don't think we've had a wet race this season, so it's always fun to watch, isn't it? You know, it makes it a little bit more spicy, but we'll see. I think in the race, once cars have got their tyres up to temp, you know, you shouldn't have too much problems, as long as, of course, you don't have an off. I think that's then going to take probably a couple of laps at least to get, you know, temps back up if you have that because of the cold conditions. I mean, the track temperature will be very low, of course. I'd like to think we get some rain, but it does at the moment. The forecast does look dry, but it's just, of course, very, very cold. So my next question to answer, driving around the circuit, I've not actually driven the F1 circuit. I've driven the large original circuit, which, of course, you know, many, many years ago, they were all one circuit. And then it was split off into two, and the smaller circuit, which is the Formula One one that is used to this day. I've been round on that circuit, but only as a passenger. My memories of that is sitting in the back going into the gravel trap at far end of the circuit, probably well in excess of 100 miles an hour, fearing for my life, and then realizing how effective they are, because it brought us up to an abrupt stop before we got to the barriers on the other side, thankfully. So that's my main memories from driving around there. That aside, it's a good circuit. There's a two DRS zones in this, so it does offer a couple of opportunities along the straights, at least, to overtake on DRS. But you can overtake here in other corners. Certain parts of the track, it does get a bit tighter. I mean, with the cars being ultimately a little bit bigger these days than they were once upon a time, and make that a little bit more difficult. You know, that does tend to kind of really play into why we have two DRS zones. It's fairly common, you know, to see that on a track, you know, if it's a little bit more difficult in modern day F1 to overtake on. But you can overtake, and we've seen some decent races in the past. But I'd say it's been a while since we've been here, because, of course, recent German Grand Prix have been at Hockenheim, the country's other circuit that they use for Formula One. The most difficult part is my other question to answer. I think, really, to be honest, it kind of really harps back to what I was saying earlier, really, with the weather. I think qualifying, I think getting your track position for qualifying is going to be key, particularly in this race, particularly with the weather. You just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, we could have tyre temp issues in quali and have some people go off. You could get somebody's lap ruined at the last minute, and they don't have time to get round, and that might be the end of their session. You could even worse still have a red flag. You just don't know. Your colder conditions can bring things like that. So I think that will probably be the most difficult part, but you could also see a repeat of that or similar to that in the race. So I think there's lots to watch out for. I think we should be in for a good race, and that's all. Keep fingers crossed we get some rain, and just add a bit more spice to the Grand Prix. But you never know, it might not need it.
Okay, next up, after that brilliance from Steve. Thanks, Steve, as always. Appreciate it. But yeah, next up, we should get into the predictions. Now, any predictions you want to throw out for this race, Kyle?
Ooh. As we sort of talked it up, and maybe some weird conditions this weekend, what about a Danny Rick victory?
Ooh, that would be incredible to see.
Yeah, that was a bit, yeah. Why not? He's been impressive recently. Renault have been impressive as well. You know, pretty good rusher. Yeah, why not? A bit Danny Rick victory.
I love it. Imagine that, a mad race with changeable weather, and he just somehow comes through. That would be incredible to see.
I've got Germany. A German related prediction. Who we got? Trying to think. Vettel. He's the only German driver on the grid now, isn't he?
I think he is, yeah, because Hülkenberg's gone, isn't he?
Yeah. Wow. One of Vettel... Yeah, Vettel top six, if there's going to be changeable conditions. Vettel will have a good race. He's done the Formula One podcast this week, hasn't he?
Yeah, he was talking about a lot of things on there. So
yeah, I'll have to sit down and listen to that.
Yeah, definitely. It's quite interesting. I can't believe there's only one German driver on the grid. I've just been through, and
yeah,
there's only one German driver. There's several French. That's mad. That surprised me, even though we know Formula One. Wow.
I was sort of thinking for a moment, like German related prediction of drivers. It's only Vettel, so I just had to quickly check it, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's true.
Astonishing. Well, there you go.
Because I remember not long ago, it seemed like there was only five. It was a quarter of the grid were German.
Yeah, because you had, obviously, Hülkenberg, Rosberg. Vettel was, of course, there. We had Sutil, who was on the grid. I mean, obviously, Michael Schumacher wasn't that long ago. He was on there.
Yeah, true, yeah. And Glock and Heidfeld and, yeah.
Cool. And now there's only one. Well, maybe Mick's going to be the next one.
Yeah, he's next on the next one to come through.
We'll see, absolutely. And I'm going to throw a prediction out there, and I'm going to say that there will be three different tyre compounds used during the race by every driver who finishes.
Nice choice. There seems to be more talk about that, doesn't there? They're using all three, you know, slick, dry compounds in the race.
Yeah.
More and more people talk about it. It's like, oh, we've been talking about this on the podcast for years.
For years. So we say we're changing Formula One for the better. Exactly. No one believes us, but we are.
Yeah. Maybe takes a little bit of time to feed into the F1 paddock, but it will get there eventually.
Absolutely. Exactly. So, you know, if you're listening at home and you've got brilliant Formula One ideas, just tell us and we'll tell the world, and it will happen, probably.
But eventually.
Yeah, we'll see. But that's one thing we should mention, actually, because I mentioned several years ago about Formula One using picture-in-picture so we can see what's going on during the race in other places.
Mm.
They've started doing that on the left. Like, they got Hamilton the other day when he was fighting back through the field. They had a clip of him on the left-hand side under his name overtaking someone while on screen we were watching whoever it was else fighting. Because it is, that's what we've been after. That's happened. I'm happy. I'm a happy bunny.
The graphics in F1 on screen are getting pretty good now.
Yeah.
They seem to have the gaps, the intervals, and they sort of leave them up as well, which is pretty good. And the sort of information that comes through is good. So.
Yeah, it's usually pretty good, so can't complain with that. Anyway, with that, I think we are done. So we will return with E270. Cool, we're fast approaching 300. But that will be our review of the Eiffel Grand Prix, so do keep an eye out for that one. And that should be back to the usual format. In the meantime, thank you, Kyle, for being here today.
Thank you, Rich. It's been good fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Really enjoyed it. This has been the NRF1 podcast. We'll see you next time. Until then, goodbye from Kyle. Goodbye from me. Goodbye. Cheerio.